Oh, we're live. Jimmy D and the Wolf podcast.
Hi.
All right. Here we are on a Tuesday before Christmas.
Yeah. Unbelievable. On the tail end of a real head kick of a year, man.
Yeah. The New York Times kind of did an end of the year summary, and they showed pictures of people on, you know, because going to New York for the ball drop is kind of a big deal. And they showed pictures, you know, kissing, you know, at midnight. And the caption was, if they only knew what the year ahead of it was going to be like.
It's been something, but at least they're rolling out the vaccine, man. I mean, there's lots of things to be excited about.
Yeah. Yeah.
I predict that next year is going to be amazing. The resurgence of live music and, you know, that's just going to be an explosion because people are dying for entertainment and people miss each other, man. And we'll just be that much more grateful for it.
Well, I think so. I mean, the one of the articles that I read, the guy was talking about, you do realize that the Roaring Twenties happened after the 1918 pandemic. People were all pent up. But, I mean, there's more there. That's trying to make a point, but it also was after World War I. So, you know, there was a lot of pent up want, desire to enjoy life. I mean, you had a bunch of soldiers that had been over in Europe in World War I who didn't think they're probably going to come back. And when they did come back, they're like, man, I'm going to enjoy my life. So it wasn't just the pandemic. It was also the Spanish flu pandemic. It was also World War I having ended.
Sure, but the level of being entertained to 1918 people versus 2020 people is a whole different world, man. You know, things getting close. It's gonna be great, and I'm excited for it. I'm excited for this coming year. I really am.
Yeah, I have to get in that mode. I usually like to really get. Really get deep on analyzing my year and then making goals. We'll see how I did on all my goals and then analyzing and setting goals for the next year, 2021. And so that'll take me some time. And I usually do that between Christmas and New Year's. It takes at least that much time. Usually I'm not even done by New Year's Day.
Sure.
Pretty deep dive. There are those who, you know, like Gary Vee says, don't look back. Don't even look at the past. But I think that's a mistake. I mean, Gary Vee is somebody I respect. But you can learn a lot from your past. I mean, it's if you want to learn how you reacted to things, and it's all about trying to learn yourself, I feel. I mean,
it's all self-awareness.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all self-awareness and being able to claim and own your strengths and your weaknesses and your own BS, man. A lot of it just being able to raise your hand and say, that's on me, make it better, live and learn. And as we say all the time, you know, fail fast. We're all failing constantly. And the people I've met that are the greatest at what they do, the best at anything, they're just there because they failed 10,000 more times than everybody else has, and they just kept getting back up.
Exactly. So I think it's an important part of my development because look how I responded in situations and try to do better and see the progress and see. I don't think there's anything better than going back and looking at your entire year. And I'm very anal about recording how I spend my time. And I've got a device that helps me. This device here, it's how many sides is it? It's probably an 8-sided cube. And it's connected to the Bluetooth on my computer. And whatever side is facing up is the side that is recorded on that app. And then it summarizes for me and tells me how many hours I did a certain task or minutes. I mean, you can do it in minutes. And it's called Timecular is the app. And I started using it. This will be the first year that I'll be using that data to do my end of the year thing.
Wow.
And I got it somewhere in the middle of 2020. Yeah, I know I didn't have it last year, so I've been implementing that, and it's got some bugs. Sometimes it doesn't work, but you know, I still have a pretty accurate measurement of how I spend my time, and I use that to see how can I improve it. You know, it's improving 1%. If you can improve 1% every week or every day or whatever, you know, you'll continue to improve. So
just do it 100 days in a row, right?
You improve 1%. I mean, you're going to be more than twice as good in 100 days. I mean, it's compounded, so it'll be more than 100 twice. But, you know, it's like they say, if you take a penny and double it every day.
Yeah.
Well, this is 1%. It's not doubling, but if you double it every day, I mean, the amount is unbelievable after 30 days.
Einstein said that the power of compounding is the most.
Yeah, it's like a million, millions and millions is what it is. So something like 10 million if you just take a penny and double it every day.
Yeah. Yeah, when you start to apply that sort of stuff to self-awareness, man, you know, find the soft spots and push on them.
Right. Yeah.
Figure out what you're not good at and what you are. I had quite a few goals for this year. New Year's resolutions. I've made almost all of them so far. And I'm excited to do the same, man, to kind of reload and get ready for next year.
And here it is. Double a penny for 30 days. And it'll be worth, okay, I was off. I said it was more than 10. It's less than 10 million, but it's 5,336,709. So I overestimated a bit.
So that last week is pretty helpful.
Yeah. If you give me another day, I'd be over 10 million. If you give me a 31-day month, I'm over 10 million.
Yeah, and what month are they talking about? You can't do that in February, right?
Let's see. I don't know if you can't quite. Oh, you can't see. It doesn't show up. But the curve, it's a huge hockey stick. You can't see it. It doesn't show. Okay, but it's a huge hockey stick. It's barely above. So $1 million is the first line, and it goes. It's barely on the bottom until it gets to day 24. And then it starts going up, and then 24, 25, and by day 27, it's vertical. And so, you know, between day 27 and day 30 is about $4 million. So, compounding is just an interesting way of, evaluating. Tony Robbins, my favorite mantra I've learned from Tony Robbins. And you know exactly what it is. People overestimate what they can do in a year and underestimate what they can do in 10 years. That's we all do that. We think, oh, I can get all this done. So you be conservative in your estimates, but if you just keep at it over 10 years or whatever, you know, it's no magic number with 10, but just keep at it for a period of time, longer than a year, longer than a week, longer than a month.
Getting harder than ever, man, because we're all so used to instant gratification.
Yeah. So it is. Yeah, it's the people that grind it out and stick to it. And, you know, I like to watch bio documentaries on artists. And often I just did the Miles Davis one. We talked about that. And there's on Netflix. I love it. Shawn Mendes, who's really not yet. I mean, he's still way too young to be having career reviews. Because the guy has got to be, he's not 25 yet. I think he's 21, 22. Another one of those darn Canadians that is coming in and taking over our entertainment industry. Bieber and Shawn Mendes. No, Shawn Mendes is amazing. Anyway, and he talked about how he had this whole notebook where he had written out things he wanted to have accomplished and how he said, I'm going to manifest these, you know, about the law of attraction and that kind of stuff. He didn't say law of attraction, but it's that kind of thinking. Along the same lines, you know, this is what I want. And every morning I have, you know, things that I review. It's mindset. And he does that, and he actually manifested that. The one of them was playing the local stadium or the local venue in Toronto where he lives, and he was going there to play. And he said, I've got this in my book that I wrote this down, that I wanted to play a sold-out crowd at the Toronto whatever center would be. It might be where the Raptors play. I don't know. But and he manifested that. So, you know, guys who succeed, guys and gals, it's tried and true. It works. You know, you set your goals and you take steps to move in that direction, and you do it daily. So mindset and law of attraction, all that kind of stuff. I'm a firm believer. I know you are.
Absolutely.
How long is your morning?
An hour.
An hour every day.
Every single day. And I've been doing it for almost 2 years, and it's changed my life. And the interesting thing about it is I take that hour, and I have some people that say, that's crazy, you spend a whole hour in the mornings with this routine of, you know, meditation and prayer and visualization and stuff. But the funny thing is that I can make my to-do list, which is usually anywhere from a 20 to 40 action point to-do list. And as long as I do that meditation and prayer and visualization in the morning, I can accomplish more in the first 2 or 3 hours after that than most people can do in a week. And if I don't do it, it throws me all the way off. On days where my schedule gets kind of doesn't start where I want it to, and if I have to go directly to something before I can pray and meditate and visualize, then it seems like I'm slower, I'm not as sharp, I can't get to it until I can sort of get centered, you know, to get right and kind of in touch with things. But it's interesting how that works, man. And it's all really, I mean, when you can quiet your mind and sort of humble yourself, I love the saying that you use all the time is we find the soft spots and we push on them. And that's what, you know, meditation is to me is, you know, I have this routine where I'll pray and then I just humble myself in front of the Lord. And I try to just stay quiet and stay still. And it's in those times where the things that I need to work on come to me. Those realizations and real self-awareness. And real self-awareness isn't necessarily, you know, great job. It's what can I do better? What can I do better? Like we always talk about the 1%. And those are the moments where I figure that out. It's like, where are the weak points? Where are the soft spots? Push on those. But yeah, it's probably the most vital part of my day. I'm a firm believer in it just from seeing the results and how much it's changed my life. And it's interesting because every to-do list, and I live by a to-do list, I get laughed at because I walk into places carrying my notebook with a pen in hand, checking things off of my list as I do it. And at the top of that list every single day is that meditation. And that's my first goal from the moment my eyes open. It's like, if I can just pray myself into a peaceful state and then just be quiet and silence myself in front of God, that's when things get right.
Yeah, that's huge. Jeff is on with us. Thank you, Jeff. You're awesome. He's got a couple of comments. I don't know if you can see them on your screen. One is 100 less calories per day, and 100 isn't a lot. I mean, the average target calorie content is 2,000 or 2,400, I think. Many of us consume more than that. But so that's a small percent of the average calorie. But if you take 100 less calories per day for an average adult male, you'll be 10.14 pounds less at the end of the year. That's a good stat.
That's awesome.
And it's all about doing little things consistently. And then the next comment Jeff had was, quietness. He agrees with you. Quietness shows him his blind spot. So yeah, there's definitely a lot to be said for, especially I'm a Christian also, and, you know, spending time to be able to give, because when we get so busy and, you know, God uses a small, still voice. And if we're bustling here and bustling there, we won't hear. We won't hear that voice. Won't be able to speak to us. So,
and there's more noise than ever right now.
Right. These are crazy times right now. So,
you know, Jeff, I did a weight loss thing. I lost 35 pounds between the fall of 2018 and spring of 2019. And I did it with a trick that a cousin of mine who's in special forces, he's a MARSOC guy. He said, wake up every morning and drink your coffee, drink a glass of water, drink your coffee, go to the gym, do your workout, and don't eat until after your workout. And after your workout, just eat eggs and jelly. And you remember, this was when we were first starting to hang out all the time, Tim. Remember, I was pretty chubby and I started losing all that weight really, really quick. And that's exactly how it happened, man. I started doing it. And I don't understand the metric or the science behind it. But if you drink your coffee, get hydrated, go do a workout. It doesn't even have to be a crazy workout, just to boost the metabolism, and then eat eggs and jelly. And I would eat 3, 4, some days 5 if I was really hungry. And I lost 35 pounds quick, and it stayed off. And I'll do it now. If I start to kind of pack it on again quickly, I'll go back to that same routine.
Yeah. Well, I've been trying to stay away from carbs specifically, bread, pasta, even potatoes. Now, my friend Mark Johnson told me about this diet, and I can't remember. He said it's rooted in, it's like 30, 40 years old. And I've heard bits and pieces of it, but it is protein. Like a hamburger is the worst thing because it combines protein, which is in the meat, and the gluten that's in the bread. I've read this in different places, but when you combine, our body is not built to digest those things together. This theory, the way this still goes. And if you can have those things, if you want to have a bunch of bread, I mean, I just completely cut out the bread, but you don't make sure there's no protein that goes with it. Jeff says he's lost 1400 pounds in his life, topped out at 271, and he's currently down to 191. 1400 pounds. That's amazing stat.
It's a world record. We got to get this guy his own weight loss program show. That's an impressive statistic.
Anyway, so this, I know he sent me some papers on it, some PDFs that I got, but it's very specific on things that you can combine. Like vegetables, you can combine with either side. It's like it's like a Y. I mean, you got protein on one side, and on the other side are things like even potatoes, starchy potatoes or bread or pasta, traditional pasta, things like that. And you should not combine them. Now, vegetables can go with either one. So I don't remember what that diet was called, but I was on it in 2018 and I wasn't even weighing myself. I was measuring my waist and I lost like 3 inches on my waist. So it worked. And then, I mean, you can't even have hash browns. You go to Waffle House. I like to go to Waffle House and I tell them, don't bring me the toast, but you're not even supposed to have potatoes. So you can't have the hash browns. Man, I love me some good hash browns. Hash browns with shredded cheese on them and sauteed onions. Ooh, ooh, ooh. So it's hard to stick to it, but
I could do it.
You know, it's 100 years ago. I mean, if you ever look at movies or things from like the 60s and the average person was so slim, you ever notice that? You ever,
I was watching James Bond movies last night, Goldfinger and movies from that era. I can't remember what the next one was. Something about a ball. I don't remember. But they were in chronological order. And I noticed that last night. It's like even the guys that are supposed to be the big intimidating guys on the Bond movies, by today's standards, it's like, he's not that big, you know what I mean? He's not intimidating. It's, yeah, I notice that frequently.
Yeah. Hash browns or Waffle House? How's anyone in shape in the South? Good point. Good point. Yeah, Waffle House is a picture of efficiency. And they, if you look at the footprint of their stores, it's a pretty small footprint. And their menu is limited. You know, they don't have much there.
All delicious. Every single thing they make is delicious.
Yeah. Yeah. But it gets old going there. And it's very, very reasonable.
Yeah.
It's very inexpensive. And they know me when I walk in. They know because I go there a lot. But it does get monotonous, especially if you don't allow yourself to have hash browns and toast and stuff like that. So.
Did you ever see... what was that show that Anthony Bourdain had? You know what I'm talking about? Where he he traveled the world and ate all these different foods from different cultures. There was one episode where he went to Waffle House and he was like amazed.
Really?
Yeah, he had never eaten at a Waffle House. And there was an episode where he ate there and he was like, I can't believe that you can get steak and eggs for like $8 and all this stuff, and it's really good steak and hash browns are awesome.
Well, I've gotten to the point where I know, like, for example, what I've been having a patty melt, which normally has bacon on it. And I'm not a huge fan of bacon. And I asked them to hold the bread. And the bacon, I'm not a huge fan of bacon, as I said, because I don't like crispy bacon. If I'm going to have bisque bacon, I want it, you know, soft in the middle so it doesn't break. And there is, depending on the cook, I'll look over and see who's on the grill. Because I know one guy makes my bacon the way I like it, and the other guy makes it, just fries the heck out of it, and it's so brittle, you look at it and it would break. And if he's on the grill, I won't order
right
my local Waffle House. So you do get some variability.
I don't hate it, man. I just think it's, out of all the ways to prepare pork, I think it's probably the low one on the totem pole for me.
I agree.
I'd rather have anything else. Sausage or bratwurst or ribs or tenderloins, pork chops, any other way than bacon. I'll eat now, it. Like,
Now, my nephew Seth and his buddy Donnie is here. And Donnie is from Ohio. And Donnie is, I didn't realize, the guy is an accomplished chef or cook. He's self-taught, I believe. And they have made two sets of racks of ribs while they were here and using my smoker. And they've only been here about a week, and they've made two sets already. And, man, this stuff is just amazing stuff. So, yeah, there's a lot of better ways to. I mean, I like pulled pork. I've made pulled pork myself. As far as talking about pork, bacon. I don't care for bacon. So
either ribs have like a sedative quality for me, man. Every time I eat ribs, I about pass out. Seriously. My mom made this thing one time. I may have told you this before, but she made this. She took a pork loin and injected the center of it with homemade apple pie filling. I shouldn't even say this on her podcast. We should patent this and become billionaires. She injected the middle of it with homemade apple pie filling and breaded it and deep fried it. This thing, dude, it was stupid good. We go over there to watch the Colts games. We're huge Colts fans. And she made it two Sundays in a row. And both Sundays, none of us were awake for like the second quarter of the game. So I was like, you can't, you got to stop making it. Like, we're not responsible enough. Even, you know, we age when you're done. It was seriously, dude, It was amazing. It was the best thing I've ever tasted.
Hey, talk about games.
It caramelizes when it gets fried. It's amazing.
Did you happen to catch the Monday night game? Because so these guys are from Ohio, so we watched the game.
Memphis went on and on about it, said it was like the game of the year.
Yeah, well, they were saying it's the best, maybe the best Monday night football game they've seen, some people are saying. It was absolutely amazing. You know, no warning label, no driving after eating roast for Jimmy and his family.
Yeah.
So not to veer into sports, but the Browns, it just boggles my mind because I must be in an alternative universe because the Cleveland Browns have always been the doormat of the league, and now they're actually pretty doggone good.
Sure.
You know, so yeah. It's amazing how that can change in 1 year. I mean, and I'm just a passive fan or not a very active fan, so I don't know all the ins and outs. But
I living in Indiana and we're close to Ohio. I'm only an hour away from Ohio. I root for the Ohio teams just because there's a lot of people that I love that are huge Bengals fans and huge Browns fans. And they've sucked my whole life. As long as I remember, those teams have been terrible, man. Terrible. So I try to root for them when I can, just for some of my people that stand by them, you know. Especially if they have a terrible owner.
Jeff says best running backs for the Browns. I don't even know enough to know. Chubb and Hunt. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
There's some of their strength. But they unfortunately lost that game. I thought for sure it was going to go to overtime when they tied it up with less than a minute left with that, you know. And then it's like the Ravens, it's like there was nobody on the defense. I mean, they just took it's like four plays and they're in field goal range.
Yeah.
They just dropped off the yards.
And their kicker's like the greatest kicker ever. He's amazing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They scored too soon. They should have taken more time to score, is what Jeff's saying. But you would think your defense could hold him back. But I guess I don't. It's just amazing that you can in one less than a minute you could push the ball like that. And
you know, it's terrible, but I'm such a hardcore Colts fan that I was mad. Because I wanted to see them either tie or just forfeit the game. Because both of them beat us this year. Good against both of them simultaneously.
So is there a tie? Would they go into overtime if it ended up tied in regular season?
They've changed the overtime rules, too. It's kind of confusing. Like, whoever gets the ball first, if they score a touchdown.
Yeah, I know that. So they do go overtime. Right. In the regular season, they go to overtime.
Sure. Sure.
I mean, there's no ties. Thought there were ties. Or is that only in hockey? Hockey has ties.
Two overtimes, and then it's a tie.
Okay.
I think.
10 minutes. Jeff says that game was the most points of the season, 47-49. So – 89 points. That was a high scoring game. So definitely if there's a better take in the under, they lost.
Yeah.
Margaret Ambrosi says is a Washington football team fan. So good to have you with us, Margaret. Jeff says one overtime. It can be a tie.
Okay.
So, I don't know, we'll have to research that a little bit. Well, what you want to talk any more you got about sports there, Jimmy, or you want to?
No, my team's doing good, man. We're starting to come into it at just the right time.
Colts?
Yeah.
Playoffs?
They look pretty good right now. Our young running back is catching his stride. He's hitting his stride at just the right time. I think we have a chance to get deep in the playoffs or at least ruin somebody else's season.
Jeff says he relaxed at the 13-minute mark of the second quarter. Are you talking about last night's game, Jeff? Is what you're talking about? Well, anyway, radical change is yesterday, a Sunday afternoon, I usually come home and I turn on, watch, if no one scores in 10 minutes, it's a tie for regular season. So, and I normally turn on jazz, I listen to jazz, but now it's Christmas time, I turned on a playlist on Apple Music for Christmas music, and I ran across a playlist of a bunch of kind of angsty Americana singer-songwriter type stuff, and I there was a young woman who did a cover of If We Make It Through December, and the song sounded so familiar. I knew the song, but the way she did it, it was so radical from the difference. I literally had to Google who did that song, and I was so embarrassed when I found it was Merle Haggard, because I mean I'm a huge Merle Haggard fan. And I have been, actually today, I've listened to the entire Merle Haggard Essentials on Apple Music, like 30 songs. And you're 100% right, because we spoke about this before. You're 100% right. His guitar player, Red Holtzman, what was his last name?
Volkart.
Okay. Was kick butt. And Red's still alive. So I was trying to remember the story. I knew that one of those guys, those Bakersfield guys, Buck Owens or Merle Haggard, lost the guitar player best friend and didn't want to even keep going. And it was Buck Owens. I looked it up. And it happened in the 70s. Buck Owens' best buddy, closest friend, died in a car accident in the 70s. And Buck Owens said he didn't want to keep going at all. So, that was, you know, both of those guys were the Bakersfield sound. There's just something about that. I mean, that music is so earthy. And even, maybe it wasn't 30 songs. Jeff says 30 songs, what time did I get up? You know, that song is so earthy. I mean, it's so real, you know. And even if you think of, you know, the Beatles covered, they're gonna put me in the movies. Ringo sang that in one of the early Beatles albums. So it must have made it across the pond as well. That's
great, man. Merle's great.
No, that was Buck. That's Buck.
Oh, yeah.
Gonna put me in the movies. That was Buck Owens. But, you know, that was covered in the early 60s. So that must have been a hit. I don't know how new of a hit that was when it came out. But Bakersfield Sound. Bakersfield, California. But what just interests me, I was thinking about it, one of the songs is I'm an Okie from Muskogee. That's not in California, so just interesting. You know, remember Okie from Muskogee?
Sure.
It was one of Merle's one of his big hits. He definitely would have been, he'd probably have been wearing the red hat if he was alive in 2020 based on his songs.
Yeah. Well, I always loved the guitar playing and that stuff, man.
Yeah, yeah. His guitar player.
Clean, funky, and sounding, it's the way a Telecaster should sound.
Yeah, amazing stuff. I mean, you know, that was, and there's a lead in almost every song, you know, and it sounds, it's got that pedal steel sound to it, you know, where he's doing those double stop bends, and yeah, really good stuff, very good. And that's Red, whatever his name was.
I think it's Volkart, it starts with a V, I remember that much.
So,
he's from somewhere.
Red Volkart, you are correct. And he's still alive. Well, he's young. Okay, he's born in 58. He's like barely 60, 62.
Isn't he from like Minnesota or something?
Doesn't say in this. But there was another guitar before him. Roy Nichols was the first guy for, he started it, and he died in 2001. So Red came later. So it seems like this Roy Nichols guy was more of the actual, in the meat of the music, more than the Red, because
his hits,
most of the sounds for, and he co-wrote some of the songs as well. Roy Nichols did, but the story that I remembered, and we were talking about this, was Buck Owens' buddy, Buck Owens' guitar player, Don Rich. Don Rich was his guitar player, and he said, Buck Owens said, after he died, let's see, he was only 32 years old when he died. And but this is what Buck said. Buck was absolutely devastated. He not only lost his creative partner, but also his best friend. In an interview in the late 90s, Buck said of Don, he was like a brother, a son, and a best friend. Something I never said before, maybe I couldn't. But I think my music life ended when he died.
Oh, wow.
Buck continued, I carried on and existed, but the real joy and love, the real lightning and thunder is gone forever. And Don died in 74. So I know Buck had a career for much longer after that. So just kind of interesting. Bakersfield Sound, Merle Haggard, check it out. And Buck Owens as well. But I was in a Merle Haggard's mood because, you know, if you make it through December, that's just such a deep emotional song. It's
prophetic, man, for 20
years. Yeah, yeah. So great songwriting. I mean, as a songwriter, you know, I never realized, well, I was a kid. I didn't think about the songwriting, but it's easy to put together a song in modern country. Well, there's some great songwriting as well, but it's easy to put a song, just, you know, sing about tailgating and a girl and cutoffs and sure, putting keys on the dash and
sure,
going mudding or something, you know, bro country. That's
I used to get overwhelmed by learning all the lyrics to some of the Johnny Cash songs when I was really, really young and playing in country bands. And I got really overwhelmed trying to remember the lyrics to like A Boy Named Sue and I've Been Everywhere. And some of his songs have tons and tons and tons of verses. And then when I got older, I started seeing footage of him performing them. And he always had a music stand in front of him with his own lyrics written down. So it was kind of a relief, you know, like I didn't feel so bad about having a hard time remembering him because he didn't remember him either.
Well, how about Dylan? I mean, Everything's Broken. We used to do that song. It was a Dylan song. I didn't even realize it was a Dylan song because we were covering the cover that Kenny Wayne Shepherd did, right, which is Everything's Broken. And that's got a mile a minute lyrics. And a guy comes up and he says, thank you for doing a Dylan cover. And I said, which song was a Dylan cover?
Right.
That was back when I wasn't so concerned about who wrote the songs. Now I always want to know who writes the songs. And
and I mean, that's the hard part. It's coming up with the song.
Yeah. Yeah. It all starts with the song. So, anyway, Merle Haggard, great artist, and Buck Owens, Bakersfield Sound, and real, real stuff. I mean, really, you'd have to say a precursor to quote unquote outlaw country, wouldn't you think? I mean, yeah,
those were the guys, man. I always felt like Merle was, you know, kind of like what Muddy Waters was to a lot of the rock guys that came after him. Like, Muddy was really the guy that planted the seed. And that's what Merle was, in my mind, to all the outlaw country guys. After, like, the Wheelies and Waylon and all those cats. Merle definitely had it, his own thing.
Talk about Willie. One of the songs on the thing was Pancho and Lefty with Willie and Merle on a duet. I mean, they took verses and then they harmonized for, I think, the last few choruses, you know, Pancho and Lefty, written by what's his name?
Towns Van Zandt.
Towns Van Zandt, yeah. Got it back. Yeah,
a great quote from Steve Earle. Steve Earle said, Towns Van Zandt's the greatest songwriter that's ever lived, and I'd stand on Bob Dylan's kitchen, or I'd stand on Bob Dylan's coffee table and tell Bob Dylan that. And when they asked Towns Van about it, Towns Van Zandt said, I've seen Bob Dylan's security, and if Steve Earle thinks he's going to stand on Bob Dylan's coffee table, he's sadly mistaken. I thought that was great.
Bob Dylan sold all his songs in the last week. Last week. Close to $400 million, they think. It's not publicly released what he got for him, but he sold all the writers, and he owns all his own publishing, so that includes the publishing side as well.
Right.
And, you know, he's cashing out. Well, he's 78, I think, late 70s.
Well, now he'll be able to write great songs with that kind of cheese.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't count for any new stuff he writes. And he just did an album that was in the discussion for Grammy Album of the Year. It was mentioned in articles, but it didn't get a nomination. It's not nominated, so it won't get Album of the Year. But it was, you know, he's still writing great stuff. And there's a 15-minute song on there.
Watch him sitting on his best work.
Sorry?
Watch him be sitting on his best work. Wouldn't that be Dylan-esque if he sold the catalog? And then all of a sudden he releases an album of the best Dylan songs ever.
Yeah.
These are the ones I sit back.
Taylor Swift just released a surprise album. Again, another one. And this one's got, I think, 15 songs on it. And she released Folklore. 300 or 400 million should free up the mind for the chakras to flow. Yeah, she released another surprise album without any, she announced it and it released, dropped 12 hours later. It dropped on Friday, and I haven't listened to it yet, but everyone's shocked by how she's producing so much music in this pandemic. I mean, she's not sitting on her haunches. She's saying, well, I can't tour, so I'm going to produce music and record it and write it and record it and get it out. I mean, that's just amazing. Two albums, two surprise albums in a period of like a few months. I know she got a great team. You know, anybody who's a songwriter gets a call from Taylor Swift and says, hey, I want to co-write with you. There's no writer that's going to say, nah, I'm too busy.
Well, they've got an assembly line on that level, man. I mean, well-oiled machine.
Yeah. So. Well, we've done our 40 minutes. Looks like we still have one viewer. Looks like it's Jeff. Thank you, Jeff, for hanging with us, if you're still with us.
I look forward to meeting you, Jeff.
Well, we're going to make that happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hopefully we'll have a gig in South Dakota in springtime. We had one in November, but it got canceled. And we're going to try to head that way, and we'll definitely look you up. So, thanks. Should we call it? All right. Jimmy D and the Wolf.
Bye.
See you next time.